Hello and welcome to the Human Condition podcast on Resilience Radio. I'm Lee Hatcher. This is a most memorable conversation with Adam Wright, a clinical psychologist at the Resilience Centre, on bipolar disorder, and a person who's going to make this conversation all the more significant with a quite remarkable story, Susanna Bluewall, who is living with bipolar. So what are we talking about, and what's the prevalence of bipolar disorder?
Studies have shown that about 1.7 to 1.8% of people will have a diagnosis of bipolar disorder in their lifetime. So that, I guess, would kind of correspond with about 1 in 100 people, a little bit more than 1 in 100 people. As a bit of a comparison with that, something like depression, which is much more common in the population, the rate in your lifetime of being diagnosed with depression is actually about 16.6%. So it's quite less prevalent, but still there in the population.
Yes, and poorly misunderstood. Run us through some of the differences between bipolar disorder and depression.
Yeah. Okay, so people might know that bipolar disorder used to be called manic depression.
Yes.
But it's actually a separate disorder. And so depression itself, we kind of class that as a period of time in which someone was feeling consistently low in their mood and with a number of other symptoms such as lack of interest in activities, poor sleeping or appetite, and so forth. Now, bipolar disorder actually has episodes of depression as part of the disorder, but it also has other periods of high mood or elevated mood, and these are called either mania or hypomania. And these are characterized by periods of feeling euphoric or really, really excited and happy, quite energetic, sped up, and also things like increased speech, and can also lead to making poor decisions, overspending of money, or even sometimes occasionally psychotic symptoms.
It's often difficult to diagnose.
Bipolar tends to kind of surface in people in their late teens, early 20s, and often because it has depressive episodes and they're usually much easier to detect, it often gets misdiagnosed as depression. And in fact, actually, people can go on average 12 and a half years before fully being diagnosed with bipolar. Sometimes the highs can be misunderstood as just feeling good, and so then it just seems to be depression.
I have someone sitting next to me nodding through so much of what you've been saying. Susanna, thank you so much for being up for this conversation. It's terrific that you're here.
Thank you.
Can I begin by asking you what you first noticed, what was different in your life? And this covers a range of different episodes over quite a few years as well, doesn't it?
The very first time I noticed something was wrong with me was when I was 18. And that was when I was finishing my high school, and many people thought of that I was changing my structure in life and I needed to decide what to study. So that's what the reason why I was feeling so not wanting to go out, not wanting to talk to my friends, very down. But after a while, it passed and I enrolled to study early childhood, something that I really enjoy. When I was during my third year at college, I received a scholarship to go and continue my studies in the United States. And knowing what I know now about bipolar, I was presenting from probably after my fourth month or my third month, I was presenting symptoms that now I know that they definitely belong to having bipolar. Like I was only sleeping 2 hours a night and feeling very refreshed the next day as if I slept 8 or 9 hours. My energy was absolutely double or triple. I was able to do absolutely many, many things in one day. Very uninhibited, to the point that I presented in one visit that I was visiting an international school in Washington, D.C., in a psychotic episode. And what is a psychotic episode? I didn't sleep at all that night. While having a shower, it wasn't that I have an hallucination or any voice telling me anything. It just came from me that someone or something was telling me that I have to pass to the world a message to live in peace. So I thought, well, isn't that great? I am just 2 blocks from the White House. I thought, okay, I'll visit the school in the morning, and in the afternoon, I'll be visiting the President of the United States to pass the message on my behalf. And that was absolutely clear in my mind that that was going to happen. The media was already arranged to be there, to the point that I called a friend at uni and said, look, watch the TV in the afternoon because I'm going to be there. Wow. And things that I told the teachers during morning tea of my plans in the afternoon, and they thought that that's not a great idea. So they alerted my lecturer, who probably put the two together, and I told her that I was not feeling well, and then I was taken to an emergency room where they gave me something quite strong, obviously, to sleep, and gee, I needed that sleep.
In hospital.
Yes, it was in hospital in an emergency room until someone from uni came to pick me up.
But you still didn't get a diagnosis for a while, did you?
Well, not at the emergency room, but when I was taken to the hospital, I was there for a while at a proper psychiatric hospital. Unfortunately, the doctors, knowing that I had an episode of psychosis, in the United States, we're talking about the 1980, in the United States, they were diagnosing any person that had a psychotic episode as having schizophrenia. So that's exactly the diagnosis they gave me. And unfortunately, I was also prescribed medications to correct that schizophrenia, that it really affects a complete different neurotransmitter, which is the dopamine. And unfortunately, I believe that that gave me the hallucinations and voices that I started to have, that definitely they're not part of bipolar. And I went back home, being born in Argentina, I went back home where my parents were destroyed. And of course, in America, they saw the highs. In Argentina, they saw the lows.
Yes.
And I was treated as if having just a depression. And it was a really bad time. I was, for 10 months, in bed, taking an enormous cocktail of, I don't know how many medications, but it was a patching one effect to the next.
Yeah.
Like, one day I went to the doctor, and just imagine a 20-year-old moving the mouth without stop and not having any control. And the doctor just said, oh, don't worry, I'll give you something for Parkinson and that will stop.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was a band-aid constantly. Yes. Of my what was happening to me, but nothing was really tackling my mood, to the point that it debilitated my mood so badly that I became a zombie.
How old were you?
I was 21.
Wow. So how did you finally get the diagnosis of bipolar disorder?
20 years later.
20 years?
Yes. When I came to Australia, that was the only time that I had a suicide attempt. And I'm very happy that it didn't go any further, because now I understand that what I wanted was to end the pain and not my life.
Yes.
So I'm happy that I didn't follow with my suicide attempt, because now I understand that there is a solution for bipolar. And once it's diagnosed properly, there is treatment and a person can manage the condition very well.
So what happened 20 years later then?
Well, I met my husband. We came to Australia and I had two children. And I was able to even validate my degree, and I started to work as a early childhood teacher. I was really enjoying my job. I established two long day care centers. So I was really, really fulfilling my life with a lot of things that I really enjoyed. Until one day, that was in 1997, I just woke up feeling that I had the flu, you know, and that was not a flu. I just went downstairs and I curled myself in a fetal position, and that was a catatonic position for a long time until my husband discovered me, and I couldn't talk. I didn't want to move from there. I didn't want to dress. I didn't want to do anything. So my husband took me to the doctor, who straight away took me to a psychiatric clinic where I was there for 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah. They didn't know exactly what I had. I was presenting with a major depression. And they started to give me medications to try to lift that mood. Unfortunately, for about 3 months, because there were two medications, and of course, they start with one. It takes about 15 days to really kick in, and it didn't work. So then you wean from that, and you start with another one. So that process was the most painful one in my entire life. It's just horrible, and I think I survived it, first because I was in a clinic, secondly, talking to my children, the photo of my children I had next to me, promising to them that Mom will be with them, that they were not born not to be in here and not with a mom. So after these two medications, they decided to start with the electroconvulsive therapy, which really saved my life. I have to say that after a few ones, I started to feel much better. The sixth one was the one that I call my very lucky one, because after that one, I became very manic. It was just like a switch. I just went really high. And I remember my doctor coming to me and telling me, "Susanna, you're a very lucky person." And I'm looking at him like, are you serious? For real?
You're insane. Yes.
And he said, "Yes, because today I am 100% sure that you have bipolar type 1. I cannot promise to cure it because there isn't any cure, but well treated, you will go back to your almost your own life and you will enjoy it. And everything that goes up goes down again." So I was very depressed again, and they started to give me again the ECT. And altogether, I had 21. But I would not hesitate to go back again if I ever felt that badly to go and have more. After that, I felt stable. After the 9 months, I felt stable. And the doctor was confident to start giving me some medication, because you cannot have medication while you have ECT.
Yes. So that was a real turning point for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've been taking these medications for 17 years, and I'm feeling very well. I cannot say that... Well, hasn't been ups and downs sometimes, but never like an episode.
You're listening to the Human Condition podcast. I'm in conversation with Susanna Bluewell and her amazing story, and clinical psychologist Adam Wright on bipolar disorder. A question for Adam: what sort of life would he say a person living with bipolar disorder is experiencing?
Ultimately, it varies from person to person because everyone's experience of bipolar is different. But if a person is well managed with medication, they take their medication regularly, and they also look after themselves well in lots of different ways, exercise, good diet, access to counselling and as needed, they can live a pretty normal and stable life. Sometimes that medications such as mood stabilizers that Susanna mentioned can, you know, well, they take away those highs that you may experience and can kind of leave people sometimes feeling a bit more flat than they normally would, or maybe they may not have the same kind of ups and downs in their emotions as they normally would. But it's not to say that they can't necessarily function in a job or have family responsibilities.
But they will have to make adjustments in their life.
That's right, yes. You would still have to make adjustments. It is generally advised if someone has bipolar that they take medication daily, failure to take medication regularly can be one of the reasons why someone who has bipolar might have kind of subsequent episodes after they've been diagnosed.
Can I go back to what Susanna mentioned about all the terrible medication she was on, which was really making bipolar disorder even worse? That's quite a common thing, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah. So in Susanna's case, she mentioned how because of her mania, she started having psychotic symptoms. And one of the ways that what can happen with bipolar is if someone has a psychotic episode, they can get diagnosed with schizophrenia and given antipsychotic medications. But the problem with antipsychotic medications is that while they will take away the psychotic symptoms, they won't address the mood. Mm. And there are specific medications which are treated, used for bipolar, such as lithium or another one called sodium valproate. And these medications specifically target the mania symptoms. And a person with bipolar really can't get to a stable level of mood without taking some kind of mood stabilizer.
Yes. Can I get you to clarify one question? What's the difference between hypomania and mania? That's hypomania.
Yes. So Susanna mentioned she was diagnosed with bipolar type 1. And a person with bipolar 1 has episodes of mania. Now, that is where you have some of the symptoms she mentioned, such as rapid speech, racing thoughts, desire not to sleep, feelings of elation, sometimes also irritability. But the key thing with mania is that usually the symptoms are severe enough to kind of cause a person to kind of have a loss of functioning. So psychotic symptoms can occur and someone may need to be hospitalized, or their symptoms are so severe that they make really poor decisions, like putting their money into really bad financial schemes or even sexual promiscuity. These kinds of things where there's obvious, you know, where they're not thinking straight and they're making really poor decisions that can negatively impact them. Mm. Hypomania is like a lessened version of that, where they may experience the elation, the irritability, the racing thoughts, the rapid speech and so forth, but it's not to the level where it's impairing their functioning. They can still go to work. They can still look after their responsibilities. In fact, people sometimes find with hypomania that they actually perform better in a number of different ways. It's still not sustainable and there still is a noticeable difference, but it's not to that level where there needs to be like a strong intervention. The problem with hypomania is that if a person doesn't recognize that they're hypomanic, then they've really got bipolar too. And so one of the things we find is that they still experience depressive episodes and their depression won't be properly treated because it's not being treated for bipolar. So there's that difference there. So often people with type 2 end up having more of a problem managing their depression because they're not treating it properly. And it's when they realize they're having hypomania and that's properly treated that they can get into a more stable medication regime.
It's important to stress beyond medication that there's also a range of psychological treatments and options available.
Yes. One thing that's really important is as people with bipolar realize over time, they start to recognize some of the, there are often early warning signs for them that they're heading into either a depressive episode or a manic or hypomanic episode. And psychological interventions can be really useful for helping people to notice those and to make the appropriate changes they need to be able to weather that and make sure that doesn't impact their life too much. Psychological interventions can also help people manage some of the other symptoms that can come with bipolar. So it's quite common for people with bipolar to also have symptoms of anxiety due to the changes in their life that bipolar can bring and managing that. There can often be sometimes more of a problem managing substances due to some of their experiences. And also just they experience depression quite regularly. So psychological interventions to help manage depression can also be useful as well.
Okay. Susanna, can I begin to wrap up by asking you, how would you describe your life now with appropriate treatment?
Well, my life is quite stable. I wouldn't say it's absolutely with any hiccups, because that's like everybody that have hiccups in life. But I went back to the kind of initiatives I wanted to have in life. I feel quite fulfilled for the kind of things I'm doing. I need to work a little bit with my structure, but that's about all I need. Mm. I feel that a person with bipolar needs structure in their life so they can enjoy every moment. I learned to live the moment, enjoy the moment, and be grateful for everything I have. I think that, yes, I included in my life a bit of exercise and I go for a walk if I'm not feeling very stimulated or a little bit flat. I know that going for a walk will make me feel better. So I learned how to identify some of the triggers or even the starting of symptoms. So it's always to have in mind that there is a solution for everything, that bipolar is getting more and more refined in terms of treatments. Yes. And people can receive all sorts of treatments to get to that level of managing their lives.
Can I finish by asking you both the same question? If somebody is listening now and feels, this sounds a bit like me, or someone close to them who has been observing these kinds of dynamics, what would your advice be to them, Adam?
Well, if you suspect this possibly in someone, a really great thing to do is actually the Black Dog Institute is an organization that specializes in depression and bipolar disorder. If you go on their website, which you can just type into Google, you can actually see a self-test, and you can run through a few questions, and it will help you work out whether you or someone you suspect, you know, might be at risk or might possibly have bipolar. And if you came up with that, I would suggest then probably next step would be to go to your GP and talk through with that, and they will be able to work with you in terms of how do we go further in this.
Susanna is a person who's lived this story. What would you say to them?
Please don't live it any longer. We can do something about it, that there is no need to suffer in silence. One day, bipolar, hopefully, and it's starting to be, is an illness like any other. And the doctor will send you to the specialist, that in this case is called psychiatrist. So it's exactly the same like if you have a stomach ache. You will be sent to a gastroenterologist, which is another specialist. So please, don't feel that you have to suffer in silence. Do something. Be self-responsible, I would say, because we need to be also active, even if we don't feel like it at the time.
Susanna, well done. You're a total champion for being up for this very important conversation. Thank you so much indeed. And Adam, for expertise and your interest. What a significant conversation, I'm sure, for many. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Human Condition Podcast. I'm Lee Hatcher. Sarah founded Bipolar Australia, an independent, not-for-profit organisation. You can find it at www.bipolaraustralia.org.au. And of course, there's a range of resources and references on bipolar disorder on the Resilience Centre website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.